Good morning. Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, September the 9th, 1999. In the fireside room this morning is Luther Peterson. Today's session number is 99-4, and his title is When Our Heroes Are Just Plain Stupid. Let's listen in.
Let's have a word of prayer. Lord God, we thank you for this beautiful day and for, again, this opportunity to wake up and to share the beauties of this place and to share each other's company and get to know new friends. And we pray that you would bless this day and open our hearts and our minds to hear what you have to say to us in this place and time. In Jesus' name, amen. The story is told about a young man feeling rather romantic one day, put his arm around his girlfriend, and he told her, I love you. And she pushed him away. She says, Fred, please don't get so serious. And his reply was, who's serious? Now, does that remind us a little bit of Samson? I think it does. Here's a couple more things that reminded me of Samson. First of all, some quotes from the mafia manager, a guide to the corporate Machiavelli by Anonymous. His first quote is, or whoever it is, many a difference can be resolved between the sheets. And here's another quote. Friends are never as important as family. Do not confuse the loyalty of friendship with a bond of blood. Friends you can buy. Family is forever. Thick or thin, feast or famine, to the bitter end. Except for the exceptions. Every family has its share of idiots, half-wits, defectives, bumblers, drunks, addicts, and traitors. It's inevitable. These poor souls are more to be pitied and dealt with than chastised long and loudly, especially since that's usually without result. Okay, those are some quotes. And before we go any further, we should just notice, is Samson mentioned in the New Testament? Let's look at Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, 32 through 34. Hebrews 11, 32 through 34. Would somebody find that and read it to us, please?
What more should I say? The time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched raging fires, escaped the edge of the sword, won strength out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight.
Okay, thank you. So Samson is mentioned among the heroes of faith. Like all the other heroes, he had his problems. They all had their problems. But somehow they got recorded as heroes of faith. It's a rather curious thing that the lists of people, like in the genealogies and in this parade of heroes and so on, the people that are very imperfect, people that are just don't have the greatest reputation. But anyway, they're in there, and that's an interesting thing for any comment on that. Why do you think? What do you think of that?
I find it comforting.
Okay.
Because God uses and blesses defective and flawed people.
God uses. It's comforting because God uses defective and flawed people, okay?
Well, if he didn't, we're all flawed. I mean, if he didn't use us, there would be no one.
Okay, if he didn't, yeah, there would be no one.
There'd be no one, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It depends upon the degree of flawless.
Yeah. We've got the extreme here today.
In the phrase, whose weakness is turned to strength, and we are weak, and we use God's strength.
Okay. Okay. In our weakness, we have to lean on God's strength. Okay.
Paul puts it well when he says, God chose what is weak, what is debased. Another place said, in order that no one should boast.
Okay. God chose what is weak and debased, that no one should boast. Okay? All right. We've got a story in front of us here today. Before we go into the story, we have the Philistines as the enemy this time. Anybody know who the Philistines were? What do you know about the Philistines? First of all, we know that the Ammonites are over here. The Philistines are over here. They come from Crete, an island. They came down and they settled along the coast sometime before the Israelites came into the Promised Land. The tribe of Dan, which Samson belongs to, was just a very close border to the Philistines. What kind of people were they, you know?
Seafaring.
What's the most famous man among the Philistines that we know?
Goliath.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Now, they were called Philistines. Does that sound like any word that's used today to describe that area?
Palestine.
Yes, the word Palestine comes from that. It originates from that word, Philistines. Okay, well, again, I'd like to simply summarize this story. This is four chapters long, so I'm just sort of condensing a little bit. That's why it's good, if you haven't read this recently, you should read those four chapters and get all the gory details. I just try to summarize this in my own words as best as possible. I wrote this out to try to say this as succinctly as we can. Well, anyhow, the story does not begin with the people crying out to God for help. God simply initiates an act of deliverance. God sends a messenger to a young woman to tell her, "Behold, you are barren and have no children, but you shall conceive and bear a son. This is to be a special child, dedicated to the Lord, and he shall begin to deliver Israel from the land, from the hand of the Philistines." That's the message that came to this young woman from the angel. Does this language sound familiar?
Yes.
Where do you hear it other places?
Mary.
Yeah, the angel Gabriel who came to Mary. Very similar kind of a thing that you hear there.
Sarah.
And Sarah, okay. There's another one. Sarah.
Hannah.
Anna.
Elizabeth.
It's a theme that we find quite often, that these great heroes, the people that emerge as great leaders, come from that kind of a setting. So this child shall be called, it says in Luke, announcing Jesus' birth, this child shall be called Jesus, which means one who saves, for he will save his people from their sins. So in both instances, God initiates an act of deliverance by announcing the birth of a child. This boy was to be brought up a Nazarite. What were the requirements for being a Nazarite? There were three. What were they?
You can cut your hair.
Can't cut your hair.
No wine.
Yeah, no alcoholic beverages. That's right. That's two. And the third one? Never touch a dead body. Okay. Those were the three. How many of these vows did Samson keep?
None.
Absolutely none of them. Well, anyway, it says that this child was born, and the boy grew, and the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. Again, does that remind you of something? Again, it's just the same language as used in the life of Jesus and John the Baptist and so on. Well, one of the first stories we encounter is how Samson got his wife. It says he goes over to this little town of Timnah and falls in love with this girl. He comes back and tells his parents, you know, I've fallen in love with this girl over in this Philistine town of Timnah. I want to marry her. Get her for me. What? This gifted son of ours? The one whose birth has been announced by a messenger from God? And he wants to marry outside of our faith and tradition? And so they try to talk him out of it. But he's got his mind made up. He's not going to be changed. And so they go along with it. They can't stop him anyway. So they begin to make arrangements for the wedding. By the way, how many of you have ever had a childhood friend that your parents didn't your parents didn't exactly like too well? Anybody? How many of you had a girlfriend or a boyfriend that your parents weren't too thrilled about? All right. Yeah. Okay, this happened. It happened. At this point, the narrator lets us on to something that the parents were not aware of. It says, his parents did not know that it was the Lord who was leading Samson to do this. For the Lord was looking for a chance to fight the Philistines. At this time, the Philistines were ruling Israel. Okay. Well, the story continues then with Samson going over to this town of Timnah to get involved in the wedding ceremonies and all this. But on the way over, he hears a lion roaring in the forest. And he goes off the path and to find this lion, and he tears this lion apart with his hands. And then he leaves, and he comes back sometime later, a few days later, and he finds that some bees have come into this carcass and is full of honey. And so it says he dips his hand in and has himself a little snack. And then he goes his way. But then when he gets to Timnah, he decides, hey, this would make a good riddle. I'll see what these guys can do with it. So he goes to some of his girlfriend's, his future wife or his wife's friends, several of the men. Again, she doesn't have a name. He goes to these men, these 30 men, and says, you know, I've got a riddle. I'll bet you can't tell me the answer to this riddle by the end of the week when the wedding festivities are over. Oh, yes, well, we can do that. We can guess what that is. You just tell us the riddle. We'll tell you the answer. So the riddle was simply, out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. Now, they didn't know the answer to that one right away. But they figure that they can just get the answer by going to his bride. In fact, they even threaten her. If she doesn't find out the answer, she's in trouble. So she starts in on Samson. Samson, what's the answer to that riddle? You can tell me, can't you? No, can't do it. And, oh, come on, Samson, you can tell me. I mean, after all, we're going to be husband and wife. You can't keep secrets from me like that. No, I can't do that. I can't tell you. And then she starts to cry. She cries all week long. And finally, at the end of the week, Samson gives in. And he tells her the answer to the riddle. And she tells the men. She tells her friends. And they come and tell Samson the answer, that they know the answer to the riddle. And what's Samson's reaction? Samson knows exactly where they got the information. And he says to her, if you hadn't been plowing with my cow, you wouldn't know the answer now. And then it says, the Spirit of the Lord came upon Samson. And he went down to the Philistine town of Ashkelon. And there he killed 30 men, took their suits, and gave them to these other 30 men to pay off his debt. So they all got their new suits, which they had. He promised them if they could answer the question that they would get a new suit. And so that's how he carried out his bet. Then it says, Samson began to deliver his people from the Philistines. Well, at that point, the wedding festivities were kind of going downhill. In fact, Samson leaves. He just leaves the whole scenario and goes back home to his hometown. He's just so angry, he just has to get out of there. A few weeks later, there's a knock at the door. There stands Samson, a young goat under his arm. It's the equivalent of a bouquet of flowers nowadays. A twinkle in his eyes, and he's in the mood for love. Samson doesn't hold grudges very long. Now he tells his wife's father that it's time for them to get together, make up. No doubt his father about that time feels an Excedrin headache coming on and maybe a sick churning in his stomach. He says that, he thought, Samson can't go to bed with my daughter. We might be pagans, but we Philistines have some standards too. See, he had married off the daughter to Samson's best man, because they figured Samson wasn't coming back again. Well, Samson got angry again, believe it or not. He got so mad that he stormed off, and it says he catches 300 foxes, ties torches to their tails, ties them together, and sends them through the grain fields that were just about ripe. And burns out all their crops. Completely burns out all their crops. The stories go on and on like this. He kills some people, he kills more people. And one occasion it says that he picked up a jawbone of an ass and kills 1,000 Philistines. Someone has suggested that this was the first asinine weapon used in battle. But that many have been invented since. On one other occasion, Samson goes to Gaza, again a Philistine city. He walks into town. He meets a prostitute on the street. Goes to bed with her. The people in town find out he's there, so they decide to surround the house and wait for him to get up in the morning, come out in the morning. But he surprises everybody. He gets up at midnight and sneaks out, comes to the gates of this huge, huge stone gates of the city, iron gates, and tears them off and throws them on his huge shoulders and carries them off 40 miles away to Hebron. Well, that's, I suppose, the most famous story, of course, is Samson and Delilah. Right. That's the one we all know. He falls in love with this Philistine woman, too. And when the Philistines find out about it, they convince her to act as a double agent. Okay, we've got to know we've got to know the secret of his strength. We've got to find out before he wipes us all out. So anyway, Delilah starts in on it. Now, it's kind of a strange setup because she has these friends of hers hiding in the closet all the time as they're talking and making love and all this sort of thing. And so she asks him, Samson, tell me why you're so strong. What's the secret? Well, he leads her on. He tells about how if you tie me with new ropes, I can't escape. So she does that, and she says, gives the guys a signal in the closet, and they come running out, tie him up, but he just breaks away, and this happens over and over again. He keeps telling her the wrong answer until finally she wears him down. And one day, he finally tells her that if his hair gets cut, he loses all his strength. And so a few days later, they're sitting there and just kind of making love, and she soothes him to sleep. She says that his head was resting on her lap, and she kind of soothes him and all that, and he falls asleep. And then she gives a signal to the guys in the closet, and they come out and cut his hair. And he gets up, and he's going to take over again, but he's so weak, he can't do anything. They grab him, they tie him up, and they gouge out his eyes and lead him away to grind wheat, or grind whatever the grain they had, which was, again, the job of women, which is, again, a very degrading thing for him to have to do. Well, of course, the final scene, some months later, I suppose, they're having this big festival. The Philistines are having this huge festival, and they want to celebrate their god, Dagon. And there are dignitaries there. It says there are even kings there, and they come from all over. And there are 3,000 people, and they're gathered in this huge, huge building. And so they decide that this is a good time to bring Samson out and make fun of him, put him on display. So they tie him up between a couple of pillars, and they for everybody to see, as a spectacle for everyone to see. And then Samson prays. He asks God, please give me the strength this one last time. And God answers the prayer, and he pushes on those pillars, and the whole thing comes falling down, and everybody is killed, including himself. And that's the rather sad end of the story. Okay, well, let me just ask you some questions here. How do you feel about Samson?
Makes a great movie.
Makes a great movie? Okay.
All right. He was a slow learner.
A slow learner?
Yeah. She said
some of your teachers know slow learners like that. Yeah. Okay. How do you feel about Samson?
He went out in a blaze of glory.
Okay. He does go out in a blaze of glory.
Today would be a field day for a psychiatrist.
Okay.
Especially anger management.
Did you all hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it did say that he led Israel for 20 years.
Yeah, this is he led Israel for 20 years. He does say that. Again, that's how you have this good and the bad all thrown together here somehow.
And he had a terrible weakness for women.
A terrible weakness for women. Okay.
For the wrong women.
Okay.
But God led him to this Philistine woman because he wanted Samson to get rid of the Philistines, right?
Yeah, what do you make of that?
Why would God?
God leads him to this Philistine woman because God wants to take on the Philistines. So how do you square all of that sort of thing?
Well, somewhere along the line, she was corrupted.
Okay, she was corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have a question about why did we say that was a weakness? Yeah. This is a man of tremendous passion. He had a passion for the Lord. He had a passion for God's people. And that passion spills over in other aspects of his life. In this case, it happens to be sexual.
Yeah.
I think in some respects, we have a problem with sexuality.
Okay.
And I'm not condoning his sexual behavior, you know, but I think that goes with the terrain.
Yeah, with the terrain.
He's a man of great power, great strength, and he does things in a bold way. We've had presidents that have somewhat.
Yeah, I suppose we've had the professional football players do that too. Did you all hear that? Were you able to hear that? Okay. Thank you for that. This is a very complex kind of thing.
Now, was he considered a judge? Is that how he got into judge?
He is considered a judge. Right. He led Israel. He saved the Israelites from the Philistines and sort of, in some matter of fashion, led them for 20 years, it says. Yeah.
I'm reminded of Genesis 50, where it says, God can use evil for good.
God can use evil for good. Okay, this is what kind of gets you out of this. Okay?
Well, of course, during the time he was in prison, his hair grew back, too.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, I think it's interesting that there's nothing in there about the 20 years that Samson was judge. That wasn't the important part of the story. Obviously.
No, that's right. It says he was judge for 20 years, but that's not the crucial part of the story.
Well,
and you raise another interesting question there. Do you think there was any connection between his hair growing back and his strength again?
Not necessarily. How he was strong before.
Okay, no, it's a very kind of a weird sort of way that's presented. Some say that it's because his hair grew back. Others say no, there's no real connection. It's simply that he prayed again. He asked God for help. He cried out to God for help. And God gave him enough strength to do this. So the answer to your question is we're not sure.
Mm-hmm. But is the connection? A picture of God's grace again?
God. Okay.
That under the circumstances, as evil as we might have think his passions led him to be, God continued to use him at appropriate times.
Okay.
And when he was, I think the decision here was between his love for Delilah versus his love for God. And instead of holding off for the love for God, he gave in to his love for Delilah, and that's when God became second place.
Okay.
And that's when he lost his strength, not when he had his hair cut.
Okay.
And in prison, he returned, I'd like to believe he returned to his relationship with God.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you for that. Did you all hear that now? Could you all hear that? Raise your hand if you can. I'll try to rephrase it.
You always have to listen to voices from on high.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's very good. I appreciate that. Okay,
it's almost as if he led two lives, the fun-loving life where he did these crazy things and then his dedicated life to God.
Okay, did you all hear that?
No.
He's almost like he led two lives. Mm-hmm. First of all, his fun-loving life, and then his life where he's dedicated to God. Does that ever happen again nowadays?
Yes.
Ruth?
I've never been a Samson lover. I've never liked this story particularly. But when I'm reading it again now, I see that, you know, he fell in love with this Palestinian woman. God actually led him to that so that he could deal with the Philistines. Right? And that he didn't go around to these other women until after his wife was killed by the townspeople because of his...
Yeah, they did kill his... They killed his first wife because she...
And the prostitutes were a normal thing for men to do in those days. It isn't like we know today.
Yeah.
about that, Ruth? Depends on what state you're from. Okay. All right.
But the other thing, I mean, he had 20 years to dispose of the Philistines. I don't know why it took him so long trouble to bring it about.
Yeah, he had 20 years.
That's what God put him here for, to dispose of the Philistines.
He had 20 years, you say, for God to dispose of the Philistines, and you're wondering why it took him so long? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody got an answer to that?
God's timing.
Yeah.
Timing? Yeah. It's timing?
It took them how long to get out of the wilderness? This is only 20 years.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but all those women.
Yeah. That's why it took 20 years.
Okay.
It took him time to grow his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question in regard to that.
Okay.
The Lord left him. And that was after his hair was cut. Did the Lord leave him because his hair was cut, or for some other reason?
Well, you know, that's that question, I think, does tie in with a little bit about what we heard from the balcony here. That he felt, what's your name?
Harvey.
Harvey, yes, yes. I didn't see who you were up there.
Yeah, I'm
hiding. Yeah, Harvey told us that he's quite sure that it wasn't the fact that his hair was cut that he lost contact with God. It's that he gave up on God.
Yeah.
And that his cutting of the hair was simply incidental. So that's a very good possibility, I'd say. Okay?
I would say that he broke one of the covenants that they made was having long hair. You know, all the three different things. And when he cut his hair, then he broke his covenant.
Right.
And so it was just symbolic, but he broke his covenant. And so then that separated him from God.
Yeah, okay.
And then he repented when he was in prison. Hair doesn't grow very much in 1 month or however long it was. It only grows about an inch a month or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, it couldn't be that his hair grew long again. I think it's just that he repented. He repented and realized what he had done.
We aren't told how long he was in prison, and they always used him.
Yeah.
And it may have been a while.
Yeah, it could have been a long time,
yeah,
too.
It could have been a long time.
But I think what you're saying here is that this is the long hair is sort of symbolic of his breaking of the vows of being a Nazirite and this sort of thing.
I think that's right.
Why didn't the Philistines keep his hair cut?
Maybe they didn't realize. Why did, I don't know.
That's an interesting question. I haven't heard that one before. Why did the Philistines keep his hair cut?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know.
Well, because his eyes were gouged out. You know, how much can a guy do if he can't see?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think, too, though, that in all of the stories that we've talked about to this point, every time the Israelites or their Savior or whoever had to get to a point of weakness.
Uh-huh.
Had to get to a point of humbleness.
Okay.
Or brokenness before God worked.
Okay. Okay. Did you all hear that?
Yeah.
Did you all hear that? Okay. All right.
And that
Thank
seems
you.
To be a theme with all of these.
It does. It certainly does.
Well, they were people in exile. And they just had to have something that was really, I mean, everything that they had been lost. And they had to have some really strong symbol or signal or sign of some kind that God still was there, because they left him back in Jerusalem how many years before that, and when they lost everything.
They're not in exile at this point, are they?
No.
The Philistines are thorn in the side.
Yeah, no, the exile came many hundreds of years later.
Oh, did it?
But they had. But your point is well taken, that they had left God. They had left God's faithfulness, and this happens in various ways down through the centuries. Okay, well, let me ask you another question now. How do you feel about Delilah?
I wish I had her beauty.
She wishes you had her beauty.
No.
Well, I don't know.
No.
Does it say something about women being used?
Women being used.
Her beauty became an asset, and then the three kings or five kings basically used her. They hired her to use her beauty and her other skills.
Right. They hired her to use her beauty and her other skills. That's certainly something that was the case with her. Other thoughts about Delilah?
She was loyal to her country.
Right, she was loyal. She was loyal to her country. His original bride had been loyal to her people. And Delilah was loyal, okay?
Same pattern. I suppose you could say God used her to bring about.
Yeah, there's that little possibility. We look at it that way, that God was using her too, in a sense. It's interesting, by the way, that in the first case with his bride, they threatened her if she didn't find out an answer, get the answer. And then with Delilah, they just offered her a whole lot of money. So she could go, yeah, she had a lot of money. Okay, other thoughts about Delilah? Okay, well, let's go on to the next question then. We've already talked about this some. I'll just throw it out again. How would you describe Samson's attitude toward women?
I was just reading a book lately that a friend recommended who's having a lot of problems. Men who hate women and women who love them.
Oh.
I'm not sure. I was just thinking about this. It's in the library here, and I was reading it because he was saying he found so much of himself in that. He said, control, anger, all this stuff is in there. And he said, it's as though they want to use women. They need them. They think they love them. But in the end, in a way, they hate them. And she talks a lot about misogyny, too. And I never thought about, I know a lot of men who control and need control, but I never thought about the fact that they may hate them. Or I'm sure they use them, but it's an interesting whole idea.
Okay, now, could you all hear him? Did everybody hear what he said? If you didn't, tell me and we'll have it repeated again. Okay. That's quite an analysis that you just gave us there.
I haven't read the book totally, but it's fascinating because several aspects I never thought of. And yet this friend told me, he said, I've been like that a lot. He said, I saw myself, especially the anger, control, and always wanting what he wanted.
Okay. All right. Other thoughts on, yeah.
To me, that's a good picture of abusive husbands, of abusive boyfriends.
Okay.
Exactly. And why women stay with those men is something I've never been able to figure out.
Yeah, you're saying that this is a pattern with abusive husbands and abusive boyfriends, and why women stay with men like that, who knows? That is another whole topic for me to spend an hour on.
I think they were raised in that, maybe their father was like that, and it's the only male image they know.
They fear leaving him.
Okay, they're raised that way. They might be afraid to leave them. Afraid they might get killed. You might take it out on her.
I'm interested in the promise or the angel's word to Samson's mother.
Yeah, okay.
And the promises that she was making, I assume she kept them.
Okay.
And I have a hunch that she laid this on Samson. And therefore, he probably chafed under this. And there was therefore hatred, unconscious or otherwise, toward his mother, which he then took out on other women.
Oh, wow, what a theory. Well, we're hearing from a pastoral care expert here. Yeah, maybe so.
This happens repeatedly.
Okay, so.
Well, the crime that was committed down at Yosemite.
Yeah.
That young man.
Sure. Oh,
yeah. Straight.
And it's very strange because he evidently has had a hatred, a basic hatred.
Yeah. Oh, this happens. Sure. Okay.
I was thinking back to what, excuse me.
Oh, go ahead, Carmen, then
what
over here.
Harvey said, though, too, about, you know, there's two sides to this man, the passion he had. And I sometimes, how did Paul put it? The good I do and the evil I don't. And I sometimes think, in all of us, there's two sides, too. And one side we're talking about of Samson now, I think it's very real. But on the other side, there's also something, you could almost say good or something passionate. Yet another reason, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a mixture, you're saying. It's a mixture of good and bad, which we all are all the time. See, yeah.
I missed where Samson was mean to these two ladies. I didn't pick up on it. I didn't pick where he was mean to them.
No.
Okay, so that, yeah, so you're saying that part of it would be an except, didn't exactly fit here with the description of
the
story.
I think we're reading that into the story. I don't see that he was mean to bought a goat one time.
Yeah.
And his anger problems were all as a result of what people had done to him. And that's part of the passion. I go with that.
Okay. Okay, so, yeah.
Well, maybe I can't buy the theory that maybe he hated his mother because of what she imposed on him. Because, I mean, you know, what about John the Baptist? What about Jesus? They certainly didn't hate their mothers for what God had programmed for them to do.
Okay, so I think what we have here is a sort of a confusing maze of things. It could be some of these theories might apply, they might not. But what's the to get at the main thought about this and his attitude toward women? It certainly was a way that God used him to fight the Philistines, and God uses our weaknesses and does things. It's a very complex kind of thing that is pretty hard to nail down something that's really clear about this. And it gets back to the same thing we were talking about here, that these stories are not the kind that can give us clear answers as to what they mean or what God is saying, but that they kind of, these stories will work on us. And they'll keep working on us, and new stuff will come out tomorrow and the next day, and subconsciously, but it is good for us to kind of speculate on what some of these things might be. Okay, good. Yeah.
There's one interesting point that we haven't mentioned, that maybe people then discovered Samson's mother was also told not to drink strong drink. Mm-hmm. And now we know that women should not be drinking a whole lot during pregnancy. So whether that was something at the time that maybe people had noticed that maybe children were better off if the mothers weren't drinking during pregnancy.
Okay.
That might have slipped in there.
Oh, yeah. There's so many different things we can bring out here. Ruth?
I think we get so tied up in his anger spouts and the things that he did, killing, that we're so upset about. We forget that God chose this man. He told him that he was chosen of God, and he was being used. And these things that he got into were things that brought about things that God was planning for him. We don't know.
It's a complexity. We like you're saying, God did choose him, and it's,
he was,
you know,
a warrior. He was strong, given strength for a purpose.
Okay, given strength for a purpose. Okay, here and then here.
This reminds me of a news report. Why it's included in the Bible, all these great things he did. But in 20 years, he must have done something good.
But all
that's not mentioned.
All the good stuff isn't mentioned, maybe. if he was there for 20 years, like you say, he must have done something to last that long. Okay, yeah.
It's interesting that in his whole life, there's only one conversation that we have recorded that he has with God. You know, his folks have conversations.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's
with angels and so forth, but we don't have anything during his whole life, during all of his, you know, escapades and whatever.
Okay.
He only has one conversation with God.
This is the only
is recorded.
This is the only recorded conversation with God that's recorded. Okay. Okay.
When God appeared to, or the angel appeared to his mother, the angel said to him, "And he shall begin to deliver from the hands of the Philistines." What happened after Samuel died? Were the Philistines subdued? Did he accomplish his purpose? I mean, he killed many of them. Was this God's way of without destroying a lot of Israelites in battle?
This was during the 20 years, you mean?
And then after he had died, where were the Philistines? Were they strong?
They continued, yeah.
The Philistines continued to be very strong. Somehow the people were preserved and protected during those 20 years. But then the Philistines did continue to be very powerful down through the years, yeah. Okay,
Well, I think it's interesting how many times, I don't know how many, but that women have been the downfall of men, beginning with Adam.
We're going to talk about that in just a little bit.
The other side of that is saying that behind every successful man is a woman.
Yeah, the women can be the downfall of a man. Just keep that thought in mind. I'd like to have you do now I don't suppose you have a pencil and paper. If you do, or just in your own head, take about a minute to write a proverb that gets across the message of this story. You don't all have to do it, but if you feel like inspiration coming on, give us a proverb. Make up a proverb that gets across the message of this story. See if you can do that. And see if some of you can do that. Take about a minute. Give you about a minute.
What's the definition of a proverb?
A very succinct saying. Very brief saying.
Communicates truth.
Message.
Wise sayings.
Okay. Stop you right in the middle of it there. Some of you want to share what you come up with. Okay?
God can use people who make bad decisions.
God can use people who make bad decisions. Okay? Let's hear some more.
The good I would, I do not do.
The good I would, I do not do.
God uses the weak and the strong for his kingdom.
God uses the weak and the strong for his kingdom.
My strength is the Lord's.
My strength is the Lord's.
A wise man uses rage to God's glory. A fool destroys himself.
A wise man uses rage to God's glory. A fool destroys himself. Okay? Others.
You can always return to the Lord, for he listens and will respond.
You can always return to the Lord, for he listens and will respond.
God's ways are not known to us, are not our ways.
God's ways are not our ways. Fantastic mystery there, yeah. Okay, others. Yeah.
Well, a parable is kind of an allegory, too, like a mouse should never trust a cat. Probably.
Okay, you're saying it's sort of like an allegory, this thing, a mouse should never trust a cat. Okay. All right, any other?
Compromise will weaken you and will wear you out, and sometimes even more than that.
Okay, compromise will sometimes weaken you and wear you out and do even worse than that. Okay? Yeah.
Trusting in God overcomes evil.
Trusting in God overcomes evil. A lot of good ones here. Any others? Yeah.
A man with too much sex in his mind can end up in a lot of trouble.
We're getting down to earth now. A man with too much sex in his mind can get into trouble.
And save a country.
What's that?
And save a country.
Okay. Any others that you're waiting to share with us? Anybody? Okay. Okay, that's... Well, anyhow, do you see any evidence of a fire motif through the stories of Samson?
A what?
A fire motif.
The angels.
With the foxes.
The foxes? Okay. Others?
The angel disappearing in the fire after he had told his mother she'd be...
Oh, I forgot about that. The angel disappearing into the fire after he told... Okay. Others?
And his wife's people burned down the first house and the family home when they saw what... well, they were angry because he had brought Samson's wrath on them.
Yeah.
And so they burned down the father-in-law and mother and the wife's home.
Yeah, after Samson sent the foxes through and burned up all their crops, then they came and burned down the house, whole house, and burned and killed killed her and her whole family. Okay. Other parts of fire motif going through this. Okay. Various cords that that fail to bind him are likened to flax dissolving in fire. And the whole feeling that you get from Samson, he's sort of like a fire himself, sort of raging all the time, burning, a great passion.
Isn't fire often a symbol of judgment too? God's judgment, fire in various ways.
That's an interesting thought, that somehow the theme of judgment is often connected with fire, and how does that tie in here? We could think about that one.
Yeah, the flames of fire and
Pentecost.
Okay, here's a quote from, Pentecost too. Here's a quote from Dale Davis, Expositions of the Book of Judges. You know, why tell Israel this story? You know, why did they need to hear this? Why did Israel need to remember both the entertainment and the tragedy of Samson? Because Samson was intended as a mirror for Israel. In Samson, Israel was to see herself. Samson was a paradigm of Israel. One raised up out of nothing, richly gifted, who panders around with other loves, and yet apparently always expects to have Yahweh. So Israel has received grace on top of grace, yet persistently carries on her affairs with Baal, utterly ignorant of her true condition, blithely assuming that all is well and that Yahweh is always at her disposal. Whether to ancient Israel or to contemporary church, Samson's tragedy still speaks, watch out, lest you abandon the divine call, leave your first love, and forfeit the divine presence. Well, we could go into also a discussion, we won't take much time on this, but what humor, you know, there was a lot of entertainment and humor in the story that they shared with each other down through the years, along with this serious message. Do you recall some of the funny things about this story? Some things that could have potential for humor in this story?
Well, I think they thought tying the fox tails together and setting on fire was probably considered kind of funny.
Yeah.
Good prank.
Yeah, a prank. Setting the tails on fire. Okay, others? Other thoughts? Other kind of things that have a potential for humor here?
Carrying the gates.
Yeah, picking up those gates after you think you'd be too worn out to do that. Okay.
And the big boy had trouble in his marriage, so he ran home to mom and daddy.
Okay.
Killing all those people with the jawbone and the ass.
Okay, there's a little twist of humor in there. Okay.
The jawbone of an ass, the burden of the animal of burden in the lowest form, killing all
okay.
people.
Just the riddle.
The riddle itself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And his answer.
Okay. And all those guys hiding in the closet?
But you know, those are the things that made good stories that kept those stories alive for the people of Israel.
Yeah. Humor, right. Humor, yes.
And when you finally hear the story of all of them, and then what you just read, the part of this is you.
Okay.
Like Nathan's saying to David.
Yeah, the value of humor in keeping stories alive for future generations. That's very good.
I think Samson was right-brained.
Uh-huh. You mean that's what caused his problem? No, no. He misused his right brain.
Yeah. He was very creative.
Being bald, aww, I have an excuse for my weakness.
Yeah. This has all kinds of messages for us. Yeah.
I was wondering, in many of the Nazarites in the Bible, none of them were given this special strength gift.
That's right. He was the only one.
He was the only one.
Yeah. That was his gift.
All the readings, you know, they're all to be dedicated to the Lord and do all those three things.
Yeah.
But they were never given that strength, a superhuman strength like Samson.
Yeah, that's right. He stands alone in that regard.
Yes,
having all that strength among the Nazarites.
And then he misused it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and the Tree of Life theme comes in here too, of course, because you have in the book of Proverbs, you have the contrast between the wise and the foolish man. The person who's wise is like a tree of life, it says, and that flourishes. And the one who is stupid and foolish is like a tree that dies. You have that, again, that theme running through. Well, let's get back to this one thing before we forget about it, which ties in with what was brought up here earlier about men being afraid of women. This is a quote again from a feminist theologian, Gail Yee. The book is called Judges and Methods. Why does Samson reveal his secrets to a woman? His riddle offers the key. The answer to it is another riddle whose answer is love, whatever other sexual meanings can be found in it. Love is Samson's weak point, his Achilles heel. The story expresses the male's fear of surrendering to a woman. It also recognizes the temptation a woman offers, the male's attraction to her. The text's message to the Israelite male is, don't do it. Women rob men of their strength. The man who surrenders is emasculated. He loses his potency. Like the book of Proverbs, this text teaches the Israelite male a lesson about the dangers of foreign women. And then she comments on the fact that a harlot is no threat to the patriarchal system. She already appears and an inferior, subordinate, and carefully regulated role in society. The women to whom men are inclined to make a commitment are the ones they must beware of. Samson gave in because he fell in love. Any comments? Very brief comments
that
on that.
That was his downfall.
His downfall.
As a feminist theologian, though, I think she would be on the side of the women, though, too, in the sense that, you know, and yesterday I was thinking, too, when you said the women as victims sometimes can be a problem, too. This wife of his, you know, we don't hear much about her, but I wonder if she was angry or upset. And when someone said, women are the downfall, but often it's because they're used. And in that society, it was hard to stand up. But I still think the women aren't the problem always, although they can be used.
Okay, now, did you all hear that? Were you all able to hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wondered what the women here think about that.
Yeah, we shouldn't have this be just a male discussion at this point. Maybe a couple of ladies like to comment on this.
Well, I think it's kind of a cop-out. I mean, you got a brain, you know.
Okay, it's a cop-out. They got a brain.
It's a cop-out, yeah.
Okay.
Let's get one more comment, and then we're going to close. We'll just close. with a question, what hope is there? You know, what hope is there for us throughout all of this? Again, I think some of you mentioned this. It's forgiveness, that God can use us regardless of our flaws. And then this little quote from Gerhard Frost's book, Blessed is the Ordinary. I believe, is this saying, I believe in the Holy Christian Church, communion of saints. I went to church today. A dark mood was upon me, and everything seemed pseudo. Pseudo-Gothic, pseudo-people, pseudo-me. But then there was the steeple. I'm troubled by that steeple. Time for coffee. Thanks for coming.